The changing question is harder to address because you need a really good time series for that. But for some groups like butterflies and some other things, we can hope to answer some of those questions. Going back through the records for Alaskan arthropods, we find the earliest records in the mid-1800s from Russian explorers, and not a lot of increase until the 1900s when people started really publishing. This was the Harriman Expedition publications, and then these big jumps came from publications of massive checklists. So this y-axis is the species in Alaska in the year across. But you can see this trajectory as we go from ignorance of Alaskan arthropods to hopefully lack of ignorance. It's not really plateaued yet. We're still going up. We're adding new species all the time to the state. And of course, we're always worried about introduced species, but a lot of the things that we're adding are most likely natives that just have been overlooked in the past. There's a tiny slope change up here, you might notice. I don't know if that's real or an artifact of kind of a time lag, if it takes a while to add the last few years worth of collected records to this data set. But tons of undiscovered biodiversity, particularly in the soil. We've hardly done anything with our Columbella or mites. I'm sure there's going to be lots and lots of new biodiversity coming out of that biome. Great team of people working in the lab at the museum. And we talked briefly about maybe doing a tour after the business meeting, so we'll keep that in mind if we want to do that. The collection itself is our youngest collection in the museum, started in the year 2000. I was hired in 2006, and these are just database records. Jim Cruz had accessioned a lot of material that was undatabased, so many hundreds of thousands of specimens. But just looking at the database, where we really began databasing in 2006, and now we're up to over 250,000 records in the database for over 1 million specimens. These represent, as of yesterday, 2,872 Alaskan species in the collection of a checklist that's a little over, somewhere between 8,000 and 4,000, depending on how we count species. And we've DNA barcoded close to 1,500 of those species. But when we combine those species with species Canadians have DNA barcoded that occur in Alaska, we get close to half of the fauna is in the DNA barcode library. We're hoping to get that higher in the near future, so we have a more useful library for life scanner kits and other work. Just plotting our records that we've georeferenced, you can see obviously we're focusing on Alaska, but we try to georeference everything we can. We do have a fair number of ungeoreferenceable records that are just too vague, old descriptions. Website in case you need more information. So getting into the National Park BioBlitzes. The first one, as I mentioned, they were in May. This is Inatubig Pass. I don't have a map showing where that is. It's south of the Brooks Range. But this pass, and this is, it's a pass primarily, it was a caribou migration come through here, and this is where the village was established because of the migration. They could harvest the caribou. As I understand, the caribou don't migrate through there anymore, which the villagers are very unhappy about. But the herd is suffering. But it's a beautiful area. We were a little worried about going up there in May because going into the Arctic in May to collect insects when there's still snow on the ground, maybe not a good idea. This is a team. The National Park Service organized a variety of scientists. They notably did not have a botanist or a mycologist, but they did have a mammal team, fish, they even had a herpetologist, kind of strange, but they had a herpetologist, who was looking for DNA, environmental DNA, of the wood frog. That's its project. This topo shows Inatubig Pass. The square is the village property, so that's not National Park Service property, but everything outside is Gates of the Arctic National Park. and the dots are where we collected. It wasn't until we had finished all the work, and I mean finished the collecting and databased, that I was able to plot this out and see which of our samples were collected in the village and which were in the park. Presume, you know, these park are literally national park specimens forever, whereas the specimens collected on the village property would not belong to the park necessarily. That project, we've at least done a rough sort, so you can see the higher taxa and the number of records so far databased. There's, you know, obviously we're going to break this out a lot more. There's centipedes, this is a little odd. That might be a nymph, I'm guessing. Is this that common slug, Matt?
I think so.
Yeah. There's slugs up in the Arctic. There's these, obviously, lots of spider diversity. Wolf spiders of various kinds, these predatory centipedes, lithobiomorphs of stone centipedes. So these are just, you know, pretty pictures of the fauna that I took while I was working. This is one of the few mites that you can, like, actually ID to genus from a photo. Has these really dramatic seedy coming out. This is a ground beetle, very common broad-nosed weevil. I was excited to see this spider because it was so dramatic, but when I showed it to the various arachnologists I know, they said, I think that's an immature, and the adult doesn't have these really dramatic patterns. But because I'd never seen anything like this in Alaska before, so I thought it was going to be something really exciting. But I guess when it matures, it looks like every other spider. Columbula, of course, more of the broad-nosed weevils, aquatics like the stoneflies, spiders running on the surface of ice. So this is, Catherine Daly was up there with me for this, and I don't think I've got the picture, but the lake did have exposed water, but most of it was frozen still. And thankfully, we had pretty good weather for the entire blitz. One thing I forgot to mention, in case anybody hasn't participated in a BioBlitz, is traditionally they're one-day events, but they can be any number of days. They're just an intense collecting effort. But there's often a very strong public component to it, to try to get the public to be aware of biodiversity. Public outreach through news media. So there were various news folks there taking video and photographs. There was even a radio person who was doing audio sounds of collecting and that kind of thing. So just some more nice shots of some of the creatures there. Lady beetles were out. And this, you know, I assume these are all adult overwinterers, and when we're getting these adults in May, when the spring, but it's not necessarily, it is kind of late May. This, by the way, turns out to be, I think it's this Arctic hippodamia that, but this melanic pattern is not documented as far as I'm aware. The monograph for lady beetles in North America doesn't have this pattern for that species, and I can't match it with anything else, so I don't know what's really going on there. Shore bugs. There's some nice open water, so we were doing some of this aquatic sampling. Psyllids, caddisflies. The public helped us out, so there were teams of kids who came out with us on various occasions, swinging nets and finding things and learning and teaching us about lichen and other things they knew. These are ants, Arctic ants. We often don't associate ants with the Arctic because of the generally a tropical creature, but these small leptothorax tend to be the northernmost ant records we have. Really the smallest ants in Alaska. Some nice shots of these guys. And I did have some videos, but they're on my other computer and wouldn't transfer, so I'm not going to play those. But this is a nice scanning electron micrograph of this genus of ant. You can just see the detail on the head. This incredible micro sculpturing. There's potentially some new species in Alaska, and these SEMs may help us with those. I don't know if we ever got this thing figured out, but there were some Lepidoptera we were picking out as larvae. We did get, as Kath mentioned over lunch, two adult butterflies, and they were not adult overwinterers, so they had must have emerged pretty recently before we had arrived. So it was surprisingly lucky weather-wise and timing-wise for that early in the year in the Arctic. Of course, being in one of the warmest years on record probably helped as well. The warmest year so far. All right, so BioBlitz number two is the Bering Land Bridge National Preserve. And now I actually have a nice map showing this property in the northern part of the Seward Peninsula, and here's Nome for reference. Teller is another village that, so this BioBlitz was logistically much more difficult than the prior, in that the Park Service had to charter planes out of Kotzebue to fly. We had to fly into Kotzebue, then fly along the coast, because they didn't have seaplanes, along the coast to get us to the Serpentine Hot Springs site. They also short-shifted the scientific side quite a bit on this one, in that turns out Kath and I were the only actual scientists on this blitz. There were some Park Service personnel, and there were who do science as well, but some of them I shouldn't knock that, but the bulk of the folks on this BioBlitz were children. So that, you know, I was initially a little skeptical that was a good plan, if the park really cared about documenting their biodiversity. But it turned out to work out pretty well. So, and this is just another map of the area. I was unfamiliar with the caribou migration, but this is the wintering ground of the caribou, and where the caribou in the summer, and then they come down. The western herd. We flew in there on this Golden Eagle Outfitters, which had this rather humorous quote there. Kath was a little doubtful about the whole thing when we first left. The Seward Peninsula is this gorgeous treeless landscape, flying over. Just some shots of the travel. I had no idea where I was headed to, but the Serpentine Hot Springs is in this area where there's all these granite tours. Just a beautiful, beautiful place to be. And there's these, you know, lowland. So there are shrub thickets, you know, down in the near the valley bottoms, but everything else is just tundra. Getting into the hot springs itself, there's two buildings there: a sleeping quarters with a kitchen area, and the hot spring inside of which is a hot pool. So the outside is this hot pool, and all the ground around this is, I didn't measure the temperature, I should have, but it was very warm to the touch, and underneath the rocks of this, there was lots of insects and life was very kind of restricted to this area. You go off away from the hot ground and you find none of the same species. But inside this building is where the actual hot tub was, with a cold and a hot faucet that you could adjust the temperature, and after a long day's work, this was a great way to end the day. Of course, you had to wait for the like 12 screaming children to get out before you could relax, but there's Kath out. We were looking for butterflies. Whenever the sun came out, grabbed the nets and went looking, and you did get a few. Yeah.
Lots of
cold ones. These rocks are heavily eroded, very sharp granite that thankfully are like unclimbable to a rock climber, because I'm a bit of a rock climber and I was salivating over this as an option, but luckily they didn't distract me in any way, so I could focus on the insects and the arthropods. This turned out to be the most common arthropod around the hot spring. This is this Pyraticus, which is a widespread Wolf Spider, Old World, New World, Whole Arctic. But you get away from the hot springs and you don't find them. And talking with my arachnologist master student, Joey Slowick, he says these things are really only found in Alaska at hot springs. They occur, you can find the species all the way down in California. So it seems to be surviving in Alaska only in these really nice warm areas. But super common under the rocks. You don't see a lot of these little beetles, family Heteroceridae in Alaska. But I've collected maybe one or two in Alaska, and this is the one of them. That was really exciting to me. Haven't gotten it identified yet. More of these spiders. That spider sample has already been identified, mostly the species, by Joey. Two big range extensions came out of that. 73 species from this BioBlitz, and one maybe new species. Little homoptrons, more salids. There were also these shore flies, phydrids, that were there. They were in great numbers. Tenothrix, these cute little columbula. This is a movie, but I'm not going to play it. Dolichopodids, metallic long-legged flies. Bimbidion, this is a very large genus of ground beetle that might be taxonomically interesting, being associated with hot springs. Luckily, there's a specialist, David Madison, in Oregon, who is very excited to look at these samples. Gorgeous Elaphrus, yet to key it out, but this was probably the sort of most attractive of the beetles we found on that blitz. These nice stonefly adults, mayfly adults. The same Old World swallowtail that Kath pointed out. And this is a video, unfortunately, this would have been really interesting to show, but the, it's not the Ausfratium, that's on a snail.
Osmetrium,
yeah. It has these defensive structures that when you bother it will produce these bright orange tubular structure right behind the head that has nasty compounds on it to help scare off birds and whatnot. But yeah, the kids were there with us collecting and excited to see what we found and helping us out, turning over rocks, just various various shots. Now, once we had explored the area right around the hot springs, I was eyeing these snow fields that were off in the distance, far to the east, and I thought, you know, I was thinking of Logan, thinking of maybe his Phleopterous beetles are over there, so they can't be that far away. We really had no idea. And we did get two of the kids to volunteer to hike out there with us. Let me quickly, I think I can do this. I'm gonna go back to that map. I did move it. Okay, sorry. I moved a map. So this is There's the map, right. So here's the hot springs, and there's the snow fields. So it turned out to be about a 5 mile one way hike, but beautiful tundra, occasionally wet spots, but mostly dry tundra, easy going. Thankfully, two things that were brought on that trip that were, I hadn't thought about being terribly useful. I never bring binoculars because I'm always looking at the ground. I don't care about birds, but binoculars are important in the tundra in the Arctic because you want to make sure that rock over there isn't a bear. You know, these things. So Kath had binoculars, and scoping out for bears was important. Also, another bear-related thing was the little safety that goes over bear spray is an important thing to make sure you have clipped. I went back to get something out of my bag, and it had been unclipped somehow, and I just hit the trigger and it fired all on my arm, and the cloud got in my face as well, and Kath had the emergency first responder irrigation syringe to wash my eyes out, because otherwise it would have been blinded for a little while. But Anyway, so no bears, bear spray accident. Aside from that, we had a few good collecting points along the way. Butterflies, we got these northern carrion beetles on carcasses, and we got out to the snow fields. And we spent a good hour working this snow field all around the edges, and found lots of staphylinids and other interesting insects. None of the Phleopterus we were looking for. We were like figuring we needed to get back for dinner, and so we had this long hike to go, and we'd been there for an hour. So I was writing up the notes and just about ready to go when one of the kids that came with us, Timory, said, "What's this?" And she was with Kath, and Kath says, "I think this is a Mecopteran." And I go, "What?" And I run up and check it out. And indeed, it's a Boreas. And this is Timory, excited with her find. And then we just immediately searched for more, and we were able to get one more adult. Unfortunately, another female, and I guess the males are pretty important in this genus. But that was, you know, proof that having kids on a BioBlitz is important. You need to have that kind of luck and that kind of enthusiasm. And I mean, I wasn't embarrassed at all that my 30 years of entomology was, you know, superseded by a 13-year-old or whatever. But so the Boreas, the genus for Alaska, the red indicate published records. So there's a known, the Pribilofs both have one species endemic to the Pribs. I documented a population on St. George, but it was described from St. Paul. There's two species known from Wrangell St. Elias. So the red are the only published records for Alaska. So there's three species in Alaska, one here and two there. There's a new species from interior Alaska from my house that we have yet to do anything with. A record from Nome that is coming out of, I think, Molly's work up there. And now we have this other record from north of Nome. And whether these two Seward Peninsula records are the same species or not, we'll be able to figure out with DNA. But these are the closest records in Asia. And these are all wingless. They don't get around much. So that species in that Timory found is almost certainly new. And then this is us flying out. That's Heidi there. She's worked for the Park Service. And she's the one who wrote the song that I'm going to play pretty soon. This is the flight out, gorgeous flight out. So let me see if I can do this. This is coincidentally the, there we go. Let's see if I can do this. There's going to be actually two musical pieces for this entomology meeting.
Scientists
and two park rangers
to complete one mission.
This isn't just your average scavenger hunt, it's a chance to do some real science.
What kind of bird are you?
Cool, there's my gander down there.
Minutes to watch this. I was going to skip some of it, but why not?
Every decision must be made with intention. From the materials to the location, everything must be considered. Let's go for the Pritzker Prize, folks.
Grain storage here. You can get grain from the plants out here.
There's sticks and rocks and there's rocks on the side.
It's almost certainly a undescribed species. It's the highlight of the BioBlitz.
With the Denali BioBlitz, which wasn't strictly a BioBlitz, in that this is the initiation of a 3-year project. And Adam Habersky is going to work on this project for his master's degree. But the idea here, and this is, follows the park road, is to do inventory work, but also to look at 4 habitat types along elevational transects. So at each spot, like Mount Healy, for example, there's a forest, a shrub, a tundra, and an alpine sampling site, and we're looking at pollinators, we're looking at beetles and spiders and maybe some ants and a few other things. And then there's 4, so each one of those habitat types is replicated 4 times into the park. So looking at the Mount Healy, you can see the transect. This is one where you're actually walking one trail from to hit all 4 plots, which wasn't something we could replicate at all of the sites. Sometimes the 4 plots are more along the road system with forest and shrub and tundra and alpine at the Primrose Ridge site or et cetera. So the Igloo Creek and then out by the Toklat. And so you have forest and shrub. Oh, and one of the methods we're using, we've got pitfalls. 4 pitfalls of two kinds, a total of 8 pitfalls at each site, a covered pitfall and an open yellow pitfall. And this is based on the model used in Greenland at the Sackenberg site that Catherine had mentioned before about the wing length project. That's one of the wing length project out of Greenland is probably the largest data set of butterflies collected in pitfall traps ever. But it's all because they use these open yellow pitfall traps that get pollinators. So we wanted to compare the efficacy of the two types. This is Adam at one of the tundra sites, and then alpine. The alpine is very problematic because of the high erosion rates and the rocks and the difficulty of placing these traps. We're also using Berlesi funnels to look at leaf litter and microarthropods, but only in the lower two elevation sites because the tundra and alpine don't really have much leaf litter to process. Some of the shots, this is probably this donkey ears fungus, some strange organisms we found. Just a couple nice macro shots. I assume these are slug eggs. Some interesting mites. This is the tundra site, primrose, last. The park, we're visiting these sites every other week, and this was our first year to kind of work out the methods, and the next 2 years we're gonna be starting earlier in the season. This year we began in July and ended in August, so we'll have bigger data sets for the next 2 years and should give us some indication. The goal is, with shrubification of the tundra, is to help understand these communities as they move and might change. There may be some interesting other. And this is Jessica Ricken, by the way, she's the postdoc who's been working with the park on pollinator sampling. And some of her work discovered a population of a newly described bumblebee for Alaska from the park. But she's working with us, and it's been a great collaboration. Butterflies. I put together a poster for the Park Service Symposium recently, and just to cover the 15 parks and monuments, etc., national properties in Alaska, based on the number of records. So we have a total 31,558 specimen records from these properties so far, 13,000 records, 261 of them identified to species, which is a pitifully small number, but this is kind of our starting point. We're hoping that with the years to come, we're gonna really be boosting these numbers. And we also, I didn't mention, but last summer, Klondike Gold Rush did a BioBlitz. We haven't processed anything from them yet. The Bering Land Bridge is very small right now because we haven't done much processing of that. There was also a Kenai Fjords BioBlitz as well that hasn't been processed. And just for kind of reference, I threw in my backyard, which, we have a fair, almost equivalent sampling to some of these parks. So there's a lot of potential to improve on the park sampling. They need to at least do better than my yard to have any respect. So, this is the new bumblebee species that was found. It's named Kluaniensis because most of the specimens came from Canada, Kluani National Park, and there. But because of Jessica Ricken's work, we know it's in Alaska too. And when I look at the diversity of higher taxa known from Denali National Park, what really jumps out at me is the undersampling of beetles. The blue is the Diptera records from Denali, this red is the Lepidoptera records, and green are the Hymenoptera, but the beetles are in one of these small slivers here, and that's totally wrong. So we need to expand the beetle sampling, have a better idea. I'll leave it with thanking all the people who helped, and both in the field and lab. So happy to take any questions.
What are you using as a killing agent in the pitfall traps in Denali?
The non-toxic propylene glycol. Yeah. All right, thank you.